Hey, Russ.
Hey, Tony.
Dan, that last episode was a doozy. That was a good one.
It's 150. It felt good.
150 times that we've...
So this isn't the same episode? We're on a new one here?
Oh, God damn it.
This is episode 151 of One Beer, One Song, where each week we miscategorize and underrepresent one beer and one song.
On that note...
Yeah,
I've got a backlog of things I've wanted to tell you guys.
All right, so we brought Blake
on.
So on
this episode,
Blake is gonna it's almost like a spring cleaning. He's gonna audit.
Oh, this is great. We should do this once a year.
Oh,
all of our things.
Well, I'll just start Snapchatting my reaction to the podcast while I'm listening to it.
Perfect.
I love it.
I told you guys I was gonna record it, and that never happened because let's be real, that's not gonna happen. But I can do this. This is instant, easy.
Yeah, totally.
Because
yeah.
We've never claimed to be correct about anything.
That's good.
The tagline is literally like, we are idiots. This is awful. However, this is the only podcast about craft beer on the internet.
And I have told people on this show, don't listen to us.
I had
you
to
mean
tell
like guests on the show?
Everyone.
I've just told people. Everyone. I don't understand why you're listening. I don't understand why you're giving us iTunes reviews.
I had to tell Russ 2 weeks ago, like, hey, that one episode that we did that recently, it's actually really good. You should listen to it. And he's like, ugh, fine.
And I did.
And you listened to it.
And then someone wrote us some fan mail. They're like, that bit about fruit and meat was fantastic. I laughed. Oh, lol.
Have you guys had the Porter's meat fruit?
What's the beer this week?
No. This is real. This is real.
The Porter Bar, the beer bar.
Yeah, have you heard about this?
I have not had the meat fruit.
It is, I'm going to bastardize this, but it's basically, they were inspired by this, I believe, Danish restaurant that does, and I believe it's liver or foie gras in a package that looks exactly like a piece of fruit. It looks like fruit, but when you cut into it, it's meat.
Yes, perfect. Do it all the time in my face.
I love foie gras. Right now. Love it. I've had foie gras wrapped in cotton candy at a Jose Andres restaurant. It blew my mind.
Yeah.
It was amazing. So you're telling me I'm going to have a fine meat product, but it just looks like fruit. There's no fruit added to it?
It's literally trolling you.
There might be on the outside. There is something on the outside that adds like a touch of sweetness, but it's driven by meat flavor.
Driven by meat flavor.
I have strong opinions.
That's a good band name.
The position of co-host is
What's it like to be me?
It's got to be a weird segregation of meat and fruit. I know that to be a fact.
I smell like strawberries and shame. So the beer this week.
So that's what that is.
Yeah.
That's the beer.
Blake brought this.
That's the beer.
Tell us what we're drinking.
We are going to drink a beer from Casey Brewing and Blending. Whoa, it is.
Ooh.
Yeah, it looks good. And this is Saison. And hold on, before you pour, read what that sticker says on the back, because that's how he denotes his batches.
Also, maybe Blake... You should pour this one after the last episode. Maybe Blake should pour this beer. Have a little bit less head on the glasses if Blake pours the beer this time.
Does that mean I'm auditioning for co-host?
No, you're auditioning for host at this point.
you're fucking hired.
CO Cascade Hops, bottled 4/7/15.
So Colorado Cascade Hops, mm-hmm. bottled 4/17/15, right?
Take the bottle.
Yeah, give 15. It to Blake.
Pour.
Like
that's 15.
15.
Oh, shit.
Shit.
That's a year. It's antique. It's vintage. Retro. We're drinking retro beer.
I'm
going to
watch how you pour. Yep, 45 degree angle on the thing.
Look at that.
Wow. He's a brewer. He don't
look at that little tiny little trickle of beer coming out of there. So Blake is
when my prostate gets enlarged. Later, that's what it's going to look like.
Russ is pouring his beer as a hopeful prostate 40-year-old.
There you go.
Look at that. That is a good-looking beer.
Oh man.
That's not the best radio. If I had remaining poison ivy, I would scratch it into the microphone like I did. We didn't post that episode.
Well, that's the thing. Good pouring takes time. So I'm sorry.
You got any scab left?
No, nothing.
Roll it up.
It's red. It's still red.
That's what it looked like when I got poison ivy for a day.
Yeah. So that's the best I've looked in 1 month.
And now what lessons have you learned?
To burn it with fire.
No, you pay people to get in that stuff.
To burn it with fire.
Yes. You don't get in there. like still pouring. And I will say, the force of his stream is quite light. There's an artistic angle to
just
it.
Just say it's better. No, it's fine.
No, we're down to dregs now.
That's good.
Okay, so let's smell some beer. I will keep us on track.
Oh, man. We've been doing sensory training at the brewery. I've been on a 10-week...
Wait.
So when you say that, I immediately picture you and your coworkers wearing like VR goggles.
Like Why would we have VR goggles?
I don't know. No, you said sensory training. I imagine you guys standing in this thing like, hello, we're making good beer. Like, no, I'm just waving your... I'm waving my arms around right now.
That actually sounds pretty entertaining.
I imagine an immersion chamber where you're... you can't feel anything. And then
That's sensory deprivation.
Right, but then someone touches one piece of you, you're like, that's my toe.
Okay.
That's what my toe feels
like. Or they put you in the tank, right?
Oh,
and
sure.
So you're in the deprivation tank for, I don't know, 8 hours, 6 days, whatever it is. And then they open the tank, and you sit up out of the tank, and they're like, drink this.
Ooh.
And you have to drink that right away.
Right, because you've had no senses, and now what do you sense now?
And so then you pop up out of the sensory deprivation tank after...
The sensory after deprivation a month, mash tub.
And you're like, there's diacetyl
so
in
so let
there.
Me tell you what sensory training actually is.
Boring.
No, we've been on a 10-week course. We have 1 week left. But we've been going through each one of our beers that is a year-round offering. And then the top 10.
Really? I can Cocoa Bunny right now?
It's not a year-round offering.
Fix that. I have 2 cans left. I'm hoarding my last 2 cans.
Don't just enjoy the beer. It will come back.
You say that.
Yes. And?
Okay, go on. 1 week left.
We have one week left, but we go through all the beers and the top 10 off flavors for those beers. And so we've been...
Top 10 off flavors?
Yeah. There's 10 off flavors in every beer?
If you want to be like a Master Cicerone, you have to know 50, I think. Yeah, there's a lot out there.
I know like 200. I'm really smart.
Boom. So, moral of the story is, once you learn about off flavors, it's not like the veil is lifted.
Right, and it's sort of like, Tony went out and got BJCP certified.
Yeah.
And I said, I would never do that because it would ruin beer for me. And you and I have had conversations offline where you're like, yeah, it kind of did ruin beer for you.
Absolutely. And yeah, it's awful.
But really good beer is really good.
Oh, sure.
But
definitely.
Dave, I was talking to Dave recently, friend of the show, and he was like, yeah, I've never heard Tony say, wow, that's a great beer. Because you can't do it. That veil has been lifted of how you judge a beer, and you get in that mode of training for that examination. And you're like, now I've had this beer, and I can't just enjoy it. It's very hard.
Have you tried this?
I have tried that.
Because that's a great beer.
It's a great beer. I mean.
Did we talk? Yeah, we read things.
I didn't bring up the off-flavor thing because this is off-flavors. There's a little bit of a sulfur note on the nose. You get a little kind of slight poopy smell.
Mm-hmm.
I get that out of my barrels too. Like I don't think it's that uncommon, and but so it blows off.
You're training people how to judge beer harsher,
accurately.
Okay.
Oh, sure. Your point's correct. I mean, here's the thing: every person in the drinks beer doesn't need to know every off flavor about beer. That's fine.
To me, beer is something that should bring people together. And I guess if you're judging beer together and you want to have a higher education and higher understanding of the beer, then that's great. But man, I just want to enjoy beer.
Sure, but okay, let's look at something else. Like, not everybody is aware of like the caramelization that should happen on a well-cooked steak. And
sure.
The Maillard effect.
Yeah. Whatever it is. Yeah.
There are plenty of consumer goods that aren't very good that people enjoy, and that's okay.
Walk us through this beer, pointing out maybe there aren't that many off flavors, but point them out to us. But point out what makes this a great beer.
So
I'm not trolling you. I'm generally want to learn.
No, better. I get it, but it's putting me a little on the spot because in the world of beer world, I mean, this is a colleague of mine.
Oh,
so I would not want. Apologies. But anyway, the reason I brought this beer though is because I knew it was going to be good, so I wouldn't have to say anything bad. So we're in good company.
Okay, so walk us through this beer and why it's a great beer.
So this is Troy Casey. He does Casey Brewing and Blending. They are in Glenwood Springs, Colorado. I was right. So I was guessing earlier where he was.
He's very, very far west Colorado, like almost Utah.
It's a beautiful white head.
But he does...
The lacing's amazing.
He's awesome. Like, he doesn't have a forklift. Like, he tries to make beer... I mean, you can look at two sides. Very traditionally, but also, I mean, it's hard to buy these things when you're starting up a brewery. But he does all these traditional mixed fermentation kind of saisons and oak fermented beers, and they're just really, really nice. I mean, this beer, it's his saison, and it's got it's definitely got a lactic quality to it. It's tart, but it's effervescent. It's got a nice structure on the palate. It hits you with some acid, but it's also got that citrus flavor that's coming from the Cascade hops, I would imagine. And then it finishes. It has a nice clean finish, and the balance through that is very enjoyable.
I wouldn't have been able to describe the citruses of it until you said that. But it's definitely prevalent, and it works well with the sour note.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
I don't think this is something I've been harping on a lot lately, and I don't know, it's only because my own adventure through making beer, but a lot of really good sour beer is actually very hoppy, and you don't hear people talking about it at all. Like, if you go drink, next time you go drink like a Lambic or a Goose especially, with no fruit in it or anything, next time you go drink a Goose, just concentrate on hop flavors and see what you can pull out.
Like, is that in an effort to balance the beer as you would, say, the malt and hops? Are you trying to balance the sour and the hops?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's a balanced element to it, but there's also a flavor complexity to it as well. Think about it, if you just taste acid. I mean,
like we did on episode...
which you would like now. Episode 20.
Probably.
Cisco Lady
but
of
I
the Woods.
But I stand by the idea of that had a perfect sour note to it. Where's any type of complexity? They made a perfectly sour beer. And looking back now, yeah, I'm an idiot, but I've never claimed to be not an idiot.
No, I've been having that beer in a very long time, so it'd be hard for me to like accurately.
But now we have this depth of sour with hops and other malt flavors that we're getting to express like a more colorful palette, if you will.
Yeah,
and
I think that plays
art.
Yeah, that plays more into the saison realm. I think saisons have an acidity to them, if you're thinking old world style, but they're also, they're meant to be drank. Like, this is a 5.5% beer, and in general, like the general rule of thumb is if you have a drink of a beer and then you immediately want another drink, that's a really good sign. That means... Sure.
But it's hard also to judge a beer on the first sip, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, there has to be... I always find that the second sip is far more informative than the first.
Oh, I think you really need... I mean, I like having a pint or a glass to really get to know a beer. Like, it's...
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, because...
We just turned an NPR angle there. That was
I was going to say, listen to these two fruitcakes here talking about having a relationship with is it a monogamous relationship with a glass of beer, or is it like, is it open?
We totally turned a corner.
Polyandrous? Like, what's the...
Well, I mean, let's think about this. Like, you have that first sip, you're tasting that beer at one temperature, at one carbonation level.
At one point in your life.
Right. As you taste it, and it opens up, and... you have warms. Sulfur compounds that blow off as it warms up, as it loses carbonation, as it changes in your glass. You really get to understand the beer. And
you get different text messages and Snapchats while you're drinking it, and your mood changes. And, it's I get it. It's complicated. Hey, you started it.
I like how I'm the dumbest guy in the room and you're the one trolling us. I just think it's great. Because I have questions. You might know things. By the way, if anybody wants to buy me a present, I want the shirt from Tyrol from Game of Thrones that says, I drink and I know things. I love that.
I think you just like summarized the entire podcast in an entire... Like,
no, if I summarize the podcast,
I have questions,
I drink
you might
and
know
I poke
things.
Tony.
Dude, that's a really good beer.
This is a great beer.
It's a great beer.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, man. He's a nice dude.
What's interesting to me is that it's...
you interrupted our guest.
I'm sorry.
No,
what were you saying?
They're saying he's a nice guy.
Okay, shut up. What's interesting to me is that if you're drinking a Saison, like you're like, oh, it's a Saison. Like if I drank this label, like sight unseen, blind tasting...
It's not a Saison.
I would drink it and be like, I wouldn't... Saison wouldn't immediately jump to the front of my mind because, Saison, you think of Saison DuPont and like all the... Like this dry farmhouse.
I call that industrialized Saison.
Ooh.
New words. We
like,
have
industrialized
new words.
Saison.
That's how I kind of differentiate it because like that's Saison post... identification of Saccharomyces and isolation.
What did he just say?
Saccharomyces and isolation.
Okay.
So,
hey, Tony, what does that mean?
So Saccharomyces try to keep up. Is brewer's yeast.
Okay. Yeah.
And it wasn't
Saccharomyces cerevisiae.
Yeah, it wasn't until like, was it, it was 1850 or 1860 that it was
when Louis Pasteur
identified
yeast.
Well, he was working on it, but the other people were working on it too, but like they identified it and said, this is yeast. Like, I mean, for the longest time, people didn't know what that was.
It was 62?
64.
It was 62.
The U.S. was busy having a like bullshit civil war, and Louis Pasteur was like, I have made beer on purpose.
Exactly. So before all that, when the Saison was actually being made, well before that, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that it had acidity to it. Because it was by definition a mixed culture, because the whole concept of culture and bacteria and yeast didn't exist yet.
And the acid keeps the botulism out.
There you go. And hops.
It's true.
At some point, we're going to have to move this to a video, a vlog.
Oh, whoa. Have we even figured out what the song is for this episode?
Yeah, we have. Yeah. Yes, we have.
Okay, never mind. Yeah, do what you want.
So the song this week, so Pat Summitt died.
A couple weeks ago.
When this episode airs. And she is the winningest NCAA coach of all time. Someone fact check me, but I'm pretty sure that's accurate.
Just back up a little bit. Yeah, Pat Summitt was a coach of what?
Women's basketball at the University of Tennessee.
And that's significant because we are, all three of us, University of Georgia alumni.
Yeah, and she whipped Andy Lander's butt repeatedly. I went to the national championship game, UT against UGA. I think it was 96, 97, and they completely owned us from start to finish. Every player of hers that completed their NCAA eligibility at UT earned their degree. You can't say that she's not an amazing coach. And hey, nice pour.
Thanks.
Oh shit, it actually cleaned up pretty quickly.
Have you ever considered beer as a career, Blake?
So I'm a certified beer server.
She
that just the first, the Cicerone, not the second.
Yeah, that's all I've done.
She's forced into retirement by early onset dementia. My grandmother passed away from complications of Alzheimer's. Her story is tragic. She died way too soon of a really crappy disease. The theme song for the University of Tennessee, the fight song, is Rocky Top. Now, I will tell you, I have a love-hate relationship with this song. The song is delightful. It's amazing. But when you hear it 120, 150, 250 times during the course of a football game from the UT marching band, you want to stab everything that's orange.
Also, when you and I were in the stands at the University of Georgia, we got our asses handed to us every year by Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
And T. Martin was there my last year and went on to win the national championship.
But so there was one guy who said he could
beat
Georgia.
No Tennessee victories when I was in college.
In fact, that victory, the first one, was 2001. So 2001 football season.
2001.
No. 2001 season.
Know what I'm saying? Yeah, when the hobnail boot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was a huge win for UGA. Anywho, Pat Summitt is an amazing coach. Although we didn't have many, if any, victories over Pat Summitt coach squad. So the song's great. UT sucks. Pat Summitt's great.
We're gonna do Rocky Top. And also, a little bit, the week prior to Pat Summitt's unfortunate passing, Ralph Stanley died, who is a cornerstone of bluegrass. And so,
who was made famous from the movie Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Right. His solo vocal version of O Death on the Oh Brother, Where Art Thou soundtrack is just awesome.
So, we looked
and
for
revitalized his career in his 70s.
And I turned this into NPR? Okay.
It was the phrasing you used that one moment in time, like, oh my God.
So we set out at the beginning of this podcast, I was like, okay, surely Ralph Stanley has covered Rocky Top.
He hasn't, and don't call me Shirley.
Fair. He's a bluegrass guy. It's a bluegrass standard.
Did you find it?
I did not find
it. No.
So what we're going to listen to is the Osborne Brothers, who were the original artists who recorded Rocky Top, and oh my God, I had it. Okay, 1967. The Osborne Brothers recorded and released Rocky Top. It's a great, like, it's just a good song. So we're going to listen to it now. Here's Rocky Top.
Wish that I was on old Rocky Top down in the Tennessee hills. Ain't no smoggy smoke on Rocky Top. Ain't no telephone bills. Once I had a girl on Rocky Top, half bear, the other half cat. Wild as a mink, but sweet as soda pop, I still dream about that. Rocky Top, you'll always be home sweet home to me. Good old Rocky Top, Tennessee, Rocky Top, Tennessee. Once two strangers climbed old Rocky Top looking for a moonshine still. Strangers ain't come down from Rocky Top, reckon they never will. The corn won't grow at all on Rocky Top, dirt's too rocky by far. That's why all the folks on Rocky Top get their corn from a jar. Rocky Top, you'll always be home sweet home to me. Good old Rocky Top, Rocky Top, Tennessee, Rocky Top, Tennessee. Rocky Top, you'll always be home sweet home to me. Good old Rocky Top, Rocky Top, Tennessee, Rocky Top, Tennessee, Rocky Top, Tennessee.
So, Rocky Top, Tennessee.
It's a good song.
Apparently it's a subdivision up there where you can go. It's got swim tennis community.
Yeah, you can't grow corn there because it's too rocky.
Nope. But what's your favorite line?
Well, now that I'm actually reading it, it's these two lines working together.
I have the lyrics up on the big monitor here.
Yeah. Once two strangers climbed old Rocky Top, skip a stanza, next line, strangers ain't come down from Rocky Top. What does that mean? Did people? Is that a murder mystery in the lyrics of Rocky Top?
You know what? That is a foreboding fight song, and it's a good. They do a good job.
It's actually the plot to Deliverance.
Wow, that's a dark song.
Well, my favorite line is "They get their corn from a jar." Obviously, talking about
corn
some moonshine.
I am on the record. I have blogged about this within. It's probably been 10 years, but. Once I had a girl on Rocky Top, half bear, other half cat.
Wild as a mink, but sweet as soda pop.
I still dream about that. Like, what is a bear cat girl look like? What is that? What even is that?
A bear cat?
It sounds awesome.
It's a cat with really big paws.
Yeah, this is an amazing piece of work, and as Georgia fans, I think we can just all acknowledge, like, this is an amazing piece of work.
And
like,
we have been conditioned as such from hearing the Tennessee Band, and whether it's on TV or live, we hear this song, we were listening to it while it played, and we all wooed at the exact time that the fans at Neyland Stadium do it. And the other thing
that's great about it is that they play it, and then when the kickoff goes, the band has to stop, but the stadium keeps singing. The stadium can keep singing,
you know,
and it works.
We visited Tennessee multiple times, UT Neyland mm-hmm. Stadium, in the 90s when Tennessee was kicking ass and taking names. There's Peyton Manning. Did you just do that?
Yeah, I'm interested.
Well I'm out. Well, anywho, I...
Russ just fainted there for a second. because why did you? Why it was so?
Because there was orange toilet paper being thrown in the stands. That stadium was the most intense stadium I've ever seen. And I've been to Tiger Stadium at night at LSU. I've been to the Swamp for UF back in the 90s when they were worth a shit. But the UT Stadium is still the most intimidating environment I've ever seen.
Really?
It's all orange. Well, see, you came after me.
I went there. I've been to the stadium.
Right, but you came
later. When we were winning.
We were there when
Peyton Manning was the quarterback.
Right.
Yeah. And it's a sea of orange and hair. I don't know how women get their hair to do that thing where it just goes up.
It's not an
stories.
Attractive stadium.
It's a big
it is a big metal can on the side of a river, and it is loud as hell.
It is. Yeah. And they were legally using speakers way back before like people caught on to it. But the worst SEC stadium you've been to, what is it?
South Carolina. Easy.
That thing is
Bryce Williams.
Surrounded by asphalt, hot garbage as hell. It's an upside down cockroach.
When we played there, it was raining the whole time. What we were
every year I went there, it was just you were just baked. It was just hot as hell.
I will say that I find for whatever reason, I mean, Tennessee's in the SEC East, and so we hate them. But they're ours. Like, we hate them. They're ours. And when it's for whatever reason, like the whole Rocky Top thing, I love. Like, I went to Knoxville a couple of times for honor band stuff when I was in middle school. And it was just like, oh, this is what a college is like. This is really cool. And there's a lot of parallels. There's a lot of parallels between Knoxville and Athens. There's a broad street. There's a campus on one side, downtown on the other. Like, it's set up a lot the same way. It's like kind of its own thing, but close enough to other cities to be close to your parents, but far enough away to do your own thing. And like,
but the color orange.
Here's the thing. Well, yeah, gross. But like Tennessee, Florida every year, I cheer like hell for Tennessee every year. It doesn't matter.
No. As a Georgia fan, you root for the meteor. That's the meteor game every year. You hope for the meteor to come down and just...
No, I prefer Tennessee over Florida.
No, see, and so there's two schools of thought on rooting for your enemies. If they're your enemies and you want to beat them, then you want them to lose.
Okay.
Why?
Because you want them to fail. That you dislike them, you want them to fail.
But
I'm not saying that's me. The other school of thought is, no, you want them to win every game except the one they play you at. And I'm always torn between the two ideas. Yeah. Like, would you want to decimate a 1-10 Georgia Tech or an 11-0 Georgia Tech? I don't know.
See,
this
also gets to, like, you and some of your compatriots have a visceral hatred of Georgia Tech, and I could not care less about Georgia Tech.
I despise Georgia Tech so much. I my hate for those fans. I once locked a Georgia Tech fan in a porta potty because he looked at me snarkily and said, "Go Jackets!" And he went into porta potty in front of me, and I reached down the ground and I grabbed a stick and I put it through the thing that locked him in there. I'm like, "Fuck you, buddy."
So that's like a caricature, a literal caricature of like a high school, like the nerd is like,
call them nerds because that implies they're like, smarter than us.
But then you pushed him in a locker and locked him
in. I didn't push him.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you locked him in a locker.
But he's not a nerd. He could be a spaz.
But you are O'Doyle rules in this scenario.
The ultimate thing that could happen to Georgia Tech, my favorite thing, is for the University of Georgia system to say, hey, you know what we did to Kennesaw State and Polytechnic school we have here?
Southern Polytech.
Yeah. They just said, you know what we're going to do? We're just going to merge you guys. You're about the same area. You're all now Kennesaw State.
Well, Southern Poly feeds Tech already.
What I want to happen is Georgia Regents be like, hey, we're all one UGA. And just watch the Tech fan base just melt down. Be like, we're all UGA. We're just UGA Atlanta.
Never happened. Never happened.
That would be my favorite thing.
That is
of all
the
time.
Weirdest pipe dream I've ever heard. Ever.
It is.
Really? That's
it is
the
a,
weirdest.
It is
that's,
a really
that's
interesting.
Pretty weird, dude. Because
it's an interesting glimpse into what goes on in your head.
That's all based on an extreme allegiance to a service that you paid a ton of money to go get an education from.
Yes, but I also love that city. And I love the things that are in that city. Hi, hey, where you work?
I live there.
Yeah, I'm very jealous.
Hi, my name's Blake. I live in Athens. I work at Creature Comforts. We didn't do that this episode.
Welcome to One Beer, One Song.
Did we do that either?
Episode 150,000.
151,000.
Yeah, we did that because I commented on how I want to talk about the episode.
Oh, see, I despise Tech. And here's why. It's because when our mascot dies, they celebrate. They celebrate the death of a dog.
They have no class.
They don't. And that bothers me.
But the idea of class is also dumb, kind of. Like, I just don't think about...
Really?
Yeah. I just don't like... So, UGA's mascot dies. Georgia Tech fans celebrate. Huh. And they're classless. Like, yeah, it's whatever. Like,
Catherine Rick gets cancer.
Whatever. Like, you're ultimately celebrating a dog dying.
Okay.
Like, that's not cool.
That's true. Yeah.
Wife of Mark Richt gets cancer, and they celebrate.
Really?
No, that's awful.
Yeah,
but that's awful. Just because it's awful, not because it's the wife of Mark Richt. It's just awful.
So to me, they are awful human beings.
We should never celebrate negatives in life.
That's correct.
For any human being.
That's correct. If now, say someone accidentally like was that? Carrying a ladder and accidentally scratched the Georgia Tech Rambling Wreck. I don't know of a guy who
That was weird when you did that.
Who has done that. What up, Bobby? Hero forever. You know, it's a car. And when the Rambling Wreck got wrecked a couple years ago, I celebrated because it's not a living thing.
Yeah.
You can make another car. You can get a Chevy Corvette and call it the Rambling Wreck.
Yeah. And we could do an entire, like, there is a deep series podcast to be done of, like, let's talk about Georgia and Georgia Tech. Let's not do that.
This is a beer podcast.
I'm not suggesting we do that.
With songs.
So you
never know beer.
Okay, look, you poured a beer.
Let's talk about anything but that. Stop.
You poured heavy metal by Trillium Brewing. We've done Trillium before. This is a double IPA. It's 9.3 alcohol. And this beer is cloudy and ugly as hell. According to the style guidelines.
I don't know if this is just because I'm in my bubble, but this is a very hot topic in the brewing world right now.
This beer is not clear.
No.
It is an unclear.
People, and it's weird because, so here's my 2 cents on this because I feel like I got to put out my PSA. So this is what a lot of people are calling IPAs from this area, the New England style IPA. And part of that is being hazy. So you have Trillium doing that. Treehouse.
This isn't hazy.
This is turbid.
I don't know what that word is.
Cloudy.
It's cloudy.
Say that word again.
Turbid.
Turbid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could you spell it?
T-U-R-B-I-D.
And use it in a sentence.
This beer is turbid.
Awesome.
He just did that. You're wasting time.
Sorry.
So what my take on it is, like, I think Trillium makes nice beers. I mean, this is enjoyable. I think the problem I have with is now consumers I literally see this where they're like, oh, this beer isn't hazy, so it's not a good IPA.
And
no.
Yeah, that's a real thing.
That's and some uneducatedness.
My problem is that bullshit. Now you have people all over the country that are making beers like this. And I would argue that the people who have originally started in New England making beers that came out hazy, and you probably would look at, like, The Alchemist was early on with Hetty Topper. Mm-hmm. Hill Farmstead kind of came after that. And you got Treehouse and Trillium coming, and they're making that style famous as well. I don't think any of them are targeting haze as a quality of the beer. What they're targeting is mouthfeel, aroma,
sure,
flavor expression. The problem is now there are people who are trying to emulate that style who are targeting haze instead of the positive qualities that those other brewers were targeting.
And then you have consumers who get the beer and it's clear and they're like, oh, you're a major label sellout. This is not craft.
Or, I mean, so there's a brewery in Ohio called Hoofhearted.
I've heard of Hoofhearted, yeah.
Yeah. And Hoofhearted? So they have started making beers like this that's super cloudy, but then they had one batch that flocculated and it wasn't as cloudy, and
And now they're out of business?
Well, their clientele was like, why is this batch not as good? And it's like, it's probably just as good or better, like, or whatever. But you're just going off some visual cue that, oh, it must not be good because I can see through it.
What's interesting to me about this is that the visual appearance of the beer does not necessarily translate to the mouthfeel.
I mean, it's...
It's a little, just, but it's not
grainy.
As...
It's got a grainy flavor. It's got like a...
I think it's yeasty as well.
Yeasty, and you can taste I feel like I can taste the husks of the grain in the, it's just very.
Yep.
It's like drinking
wort.
It's like drinking wort with, yep. But with less sweet, but with alcohol and.
Well, really, like what this style to me, so if I was going to emulate this, I think what these guys are actually doing is they have somewhat high finishing gravity. I would guess probably in the mid threes Plato. So that's going
to
be...
Give that to us in SG.
Yeah, it's going to be like 10-12 to 10-15 kind of range.
That's high.
But they're making it higher, so they have a high amount of dextrins in there, which are sugars that don't taste like sugar. So it's not sweet, but it adds that body and mouthfeel. It's why like you mash higher. So they're adding those dextrins in there, and by having that extra sugar content that's residual, they can throw an insane amount of hops in there because... The bitterness that comes along with that is being covered up by the sugar. So the balance is being found by turning everything up a little bit. And so you have this huge, insane hop quality that isn't overwhelming because the parts that would detract from the drinkability are being covered up by that extra sugar that's in there. Does that make sense?
Interesting. Yes. Yes, it does.
I don't know anything.
Sorry. I got a little tangent.
I don't either still. It's good to have experts, though.
But anyway, I have no problem.
Did we mention Trillium?
He did.
I did.
I know, but did we talk about exactly what we're drinking?
Heavy metal to double IPA.
Double IPA with 9.3 alcohol. Okay. It's like I'm winning in the past 4 minutes.
But it's...
Keep saying 9.3 alcohols by volume. I love it when you say that.
9.3 alcohols by volume.
I just wish, like, I want brewers to be targeting to make great beer, not to be targeting a weird, like, don't make what you see in your vision. Don't let a consumer's voice drive what you make. Like, I think we owe allegiance as brewers to, you know, brew beer for consumers at some point in time, because honestly, that's what drives your brand. That's how you're a business.
That's how you stay in business, right?
Right. But at the same time, also, like, you have to have vision and honesty and awareness as your expertise to kind of... Sorry, I just got too real with this, but like...
No, finish the statement. No. It's a good statement. Finish the thought.
You have to have vision and your honesty and your craft to target what you think is going to be great, and it's not what's going to make them happy on that kind of note. You know what I mean?
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.